Today's shir is Masechta Bava Basra Daf Pei. We will begin on Daf Pei Amud Aleph at the top of the Amud at the Mishnah. Haperis, Halukei Haperis Shevach Mechaveroi. If somebody buys the production of a nest from someone else, the halacha is Riach Brecha Rishonai. The first pair of doves that is to produce will remains with the mother. They are not included with the sale. And as we're going to see in the Gemara very soon, because the mother needs those babies to remain company for her, and therefore it's understood that the seller is keeping those birds for himself. And as the Rishonim explained this Mishnah, doves lay a pair of eggs almost every month of the year, 11 out of the 12 months of the year. These eggs hatch and produce one male dove and one female, which then begin to mate at the age of 2 months. From then on, they too produce new birds for 11 months of the year. So Amish is teaching us that if a person bought the production of a dove coat for a specific period, a year, it is understood that he's not here to destroy the nest, and therefore we have to give him whatever is necessary for him to maintain that nest. So that reason, the first pair of birds that are born to the mother bird are left there, because if she won't be left with that companionship, the mother may leave, and then the entire nest will not be able to be used in the future. The Rishonim, basically, very much continuing what we learned in our previous year, ask, these birds were not yet born. If these birds were not yet born, why is this not sale not a concern of Ein Adam Makna, Dove Shelah Bel Olam? The birds weren't born yet. So Rabbeinu Yonah explains that the Mishnah is speaking in a case that even if we learn and we keep on repeating, that ain't on the Makna Dove Shelah Bel Olam, you can't sell something that isn't yet in existence. If the seller and the buyer are both in agreement, then we don't have a problem. And here, the seller and buyer are fine with the sale. The only thing that they have a concern, the only issue is, what is the seller entitled to keep because of the reasons that we just explained. The Rav explained, the Mishnah is not to be understood as Peiris Shevach, and meaning that they're selling birds that will be born, and then the question, of course, is that it's Ein Adam Makna Dove Shelah Bel Olam, but rather we're selling the nest where the purpose of the nest here is to produce birds, and the nest is very much here, and the nest is already here. And the Rambam takes this even a step further. He says not only if the wording of the sale is Shoivich L'Peroisav, that it's clear that the purpose of the sale is to sell the nest. But even in a case where the words Peiris Shevach, we interpret the words to mean not that he's selling the birds, but he's selling the nest. And the Prisha explains, because if the person was in, because the Prisha asks a question, we've been discussing very, very much that if you sell a dekel, the Peiris dekel, the fruits that are not here yet, are not included in the sale. Unless you said dekel l'peirosof. So ask the Prisha, according to the Rambam, that when we say Peiris Shevach, we interpret it means Shevach l'peirosof. So why, when you sell a dekel, don't we say dekel l'peirosof? So the Prisha answers, if the intention was to sell just birds and not sell the nest that will produce birds, then the wording of the sale should have been for yoinim. That's the word used for selling birds. The fact that he used the words, as the Mishnah begins, peiris, is clearly that he wasn't selling existing birds. It was shoivich l'peirosov, and that's why the sale is included. And as we said, the Rashbam says, 11 months of the year, birds produce two eggs, one a male and one a female. The 1 month of the year that it doesn't produce that pair of eggs is actually Chodesh Adar. So the Yarish Dvash explains that the Gemara Masechet Megillah, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis, teaches us that Kiva Shenafal Apur B'Yerech Adar, when Haman made the lottery and it fell that his decree to kill the Jews would be an Adar, Samach Haman, Shu Yerech Shemes Moshe Rabban. It's the month that Moshe Rabbeinu died. So Moshe Rabbeinu was nifted that month. So the Gemara says, V'lo yod ki b'zayin ba'adar meis, Haman wasn't aware that Moshe Rabbeinu passed away in Zayin Adar, but also b'zayin noilet, who was born in Adar, Zayin Adar. But the Yarish Dvash explains that the Gemara Masechta Brachos, Daf Nun Gimel Amud Beis, says that Knesset Yisrael l'yoyna nimshala. Knesset Yisrael is compared to a yoyna. So when he saw that the month that the Goyal fell out in was the month of Adar, the month which is so to speak a bad month for yoyna, it's the bad month for pigeons. It's the month that they don't lay the eggs to have more children. So he realized that that's a great month that's a month that's not such a great month for Klal Yisrael. And that's why he was so happy that it fell in that month. Continues the Mishnah. If somebody sells Peiris Kaveris, the production of a beehive. And again, what is meant, according to most Rishonim, are that we're speaking about the bees that are produced during a specific period, not the honey in the hive. So when somebody contracts to buy the production of a beehive, he's entitled to the bees that will be produced and not the honey. Now, the way bees are produced, they're produced through a process called swarming. That means a queen bee lays a large number of eggs from which young bees eventually emerge. At some point, the hive becomes too crowded. The queen bee departs with a swarm of bees and goes onto another branch. During the summer, bees generally swarm at intervals of 9 to 10 days. And after they settle on a branch, the beekeeper places it in another beehive to start a new colony. Now, there's no specific set of swarms that a beehive will produce in a season. The Rashbam says that in Greece, they could produce up to 8 swarms per season. There were places that only produced 3. But no matter how many are produced, each swarm is inferior to the previous one. So our Mishnah teaches that somebody who buys the production of a hive is entitled to 3 swarms of bees. Kaperis kaveris, noitel gilman achilim. He's entitled to three swarms. Umasaris, and then he cuts off. As we're going to see in the Gemara Mitzvashem, there are 2 definitions of the word Masaris. It either can mean to sterilize or it can mean to interrupt. We're going to see it means that they'll alternate which swarms belong to the seller and which belong to the buyer. The next case of Mishnah is Chalos Dvash. If somebody made a contract to buy the honeycombs of a beehive, Meniach Beis Chalos, he has to leave home. He has to leave 2 combs behind. If somebody sells honeycombs of his bee, but he retains the beehive itself, he wants to keep the hive for next spring. If he wants to keep the hive for next spring, he has to have enough honey to sustain the bees through the winter. So he has to have 2 honeycombs left to support those bees through the winter season. Zisim lokot, if he sold an olive tree to cut it down for the lumber, Meneich shtekrifius, the buyer, and we'll talk about this again more in the Gemara, the buyer could cut down the tree only down to the lowest 2 branches, because if he cuts any further, the tree will not grow back. So even though I sold you the branches of the tree, my intention was not to completely, that this tree should die. So enough has to be left of the tree, enough has to be left of the tree that I should be able to let the tree grow back, and that I should still, and that I should still have a tree here. And that is the amount that the Mishnah focuses on. The Yad Ramah says that this is only in a case that if somebody sold the tree, and the purpose of my selling the tree was that you will take the branches. But let's say I sell you the whole tree. And many times you see farmers take an entire tree and replant that tree elsewhere. If that was what was done, then it's a whole different conversation. The buyer says the Yad Ramah could take the whole tree and just replant it and doesn't have to leave anything behind for the buyer, for the seller. Ask the Gemara on the first halacha that we discussed about the Peiris Shevach. Ask the one of Atanya, have we not learned in a Braisa that if somebody bought the Peiris Shevach of 1 year, Brech Rishonah Vishniya, you have to leave two pairs. So ask the Gemara, our Mishnah says you have to leave one pair for the with the mother, and here it says that two pairs have to be left. Answers the Gemara, Lakasha, Ha La Ha Leima. The Braisa that says you have to leave two pairs is talking about the first pair for the mother, and then the second pair should be company for the first pair that was born. So Amish that speaks about the first pair is focused on the mother bird, on the first bird. So that one you need one pair for. But because that pair that's born also needs companionship, so for that pair you have to leave the second pair born. And that's who the Braisa is referring to. So ask the Gemara, Maishna ima de mitzavta abarta va zuga de mishkinala. When we speak about the mother, so the mother has the companionship of the birds that were born, the eggs that were born, and its mate. So why should that not be that the babies that were born should have enough companionship? It should be able to rely on its mother who's still there and its companion, the male, that should be enough companionship. Why does the Braisa ask the Gemara, why does the Braisa teach us that we have to leave another pair? Answers the Gemara, Ima abarta mitzavta. A mother can rely on the companionship of its child. However, barta ima le mitzavta. A child does not rely on the companionship of its mother. And therefore, since a child does not rely on the companionship of its mother, so that's why you have to have its children left. But as all the Rishonim explain, once you have so many birds left, you have the mother bird, and then you have two further pairs, that's enough company for everybody, and we don't have to think about anything more. We learned further in the Mishnah, Peiris Kaveris, if we sold the Peiris Kaveris, the loch is noit l'shloshin chilam, you take three swarms, or masaris, and then you masaris them. Posh pshat masaris means that you sterilize them. Ask the Gemara Ma Masarsen, how is that done? Amr Yehuda Mishmu Bechardol, by giving them mustard. And the Gemara explains, how does serving them mustard cause them to become sterile? Amri b'marava mishmei derabyoisi b'chanina loichad l'msarson. It's not that the mustard sterilizes them. Ela mitoch shepin chad, because their mouth becomes has this sharp taste in it from the mustard that they ate. Chayzus v'oichlas d'shunan. So that what happens is they eat the honey that's in the beehive. And because they're so busy eating the honey that is in the beehive to get that taste out of its mouth, that's why they stop multiplying. So if they're not multiplying, then they can concentrate on producing more honey. And the Mishnah is teaching us that once we have three swarms, once the buyer who had contracted to buy these nechilim, once he gets three nechilim, it's considered that the seller has satisfied the contract, and now he could concentrate on being mesaris the birds, and because he's mesaris the bees, that they'll produce honey and not produce bees. This opens up an actual a question. And that is, we know that the Torah HaKadosh says that we're not allowed to sterilize, certainly not sterilize a human being, and the halacha is that we're not allowed to sterilize an animal. The question is, here it seems that we are allowed to sterilize the bees. And the question is, why is that permissible? So the Shas HaTshuvas Maril Diskin and the Kuntras Achron Ois Reish Beis discusses this, and he suggests that the reason why it's permissible is because the Isra of Sirus is primarily on the male, not on the female. And our Gemara is focused on the female, not on the male, which is a very big chiddush because the Mishnah, the Gemara speaks about the male and the female. And moreover, there are paiskim that say that one is nala l'chatchil sterilize a female either. So the answer here is that, first of all, it's not really a direct act of sterilization. What's happening here in our Gemara is that they're giving the bees mustard, as the Gemara just explained, and because the mustard has the sharp taste, that gets the bees to focus on not having more multiplying, but on eating, and therefore on producing honey. So it's not a direct act of sterilization. Furthermore, it's not permanent. It's only as long as they're going to get that bad taste out of their mouth. Once they're successful in getting the bad taste out of the mouth, then they're going to go back to multiplying. That's why it's not considered serious. There's an interesting question. Here we're learning that there's a concern, there's a serious issue of serious of sterilization of an animal. And the question is, if there's a problem with cats, what is the halacha of the problem with cats that are just multiplying and they're causing damage? May one sterilize a cat? Or if the issa to sterilize, if there's always an issa to sterilize, there's always an issa to sterilize. Rabbi Yoshev Zatzal Paskin that one may sterilize, if there's no other option, the halacha is that one may sterilize a cat. Continues the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan says the Gemara has a different interpretation of what is Sirus in our Mishnah. His interpretation of Sirus in our Mishnah is Noitel Shloisha Nechilim B'Sirus. That means that the first and third and fifth swarm goes to the buyer, and the second, fourth, and sixth swarm go to the seller, which means that the swarms constantly go down in quality. So they have some sort of an arrangement that nobody should get all of the good swarms and nobody should get all the bad swarms. So the way that they do it is they alternate. That's what the Gemara says. The Braisa, however, says the buyer has a different interpretation. He, again, is learning Sirus means to alternate, but he has a different approach to that. His approach is that the buyer takes the first three swarms, and then the seller, Mikan Ve'eloch, after the first three swarms, Achas, the buyer takes one swarm, or Menich Achas, and he leaves for the seller the next one. We learned then in the Mishnah, the son buys the Chalas, the Vash, the Aloch is Menich, the Chalas, he has to leave two honeycombs that the bees should have what to eat from during the winter before they start multiplying, before they're able to produce more honey. The Torah HaKadosh, when it speaks about things that are susceptible to tumah, says mikol oichel sheyoichel yitma, food is susceptible to tumah, v'chomashka sheyishas v'kol klei yitma, the liquids, beverages are susceptible to tumah. So from here we learn, the Gemara teaches us, because the pasuk uses the word mikol oichel, from mikol, we learn from here v'loy kol oichel, not all foods. From here we learn only oichlim haruyim lachilas adam, only food that's edible for humans are a mekabel tuma. Now, honey is one of those things that is mekabel tuma. And the Rishonim say, how do we know that? Because the Pasuk says, v'yinikeyu dvash misela. The Torah uses the word yinika. Yinika means like to nurse. So we see that it's treated like a mashka that's abein, that's mekabel tuma. But that's in a case where it's removed from the beehive. Then it's treated like a liquid. We're going to be discussing what is the halacha of the honey while it's still considered, while it's still in the beehive. So honey that comes out of the beehive has tumas maskin, and if I want to use it as an oichel, then it has tumas oichlin. Now, says the Gemara, Amar of Kahana, the Vash Bekaveris, if you have honey in the beehive, any yotzei b'dei machal le'olam, it always has the category of a machal. And even though there are times that the bees eat that honey, as we're learning, and if the bees are eating that honey, it's not a machal odom, it becomes a machal behema, they're still subject to tumah. Almakasava obviously explains the Gemara what is the basis for Rav Kahana's opinion. The loy bay machshava, that it doesn't have to have machshava that you want to make into an oichel. It's automatically considered an oichel. Meisvei asked the Gemara, we learn in Ebraisa, dvash bekaveris, and a loy oichel v'loy mashka. It doesn't have the status not of an oichel and a mashka. And it's important, as the Rashbam teaches us, to immediately establish what's the difference if it's an oichel or a mashka. Because the shiurim are different. Oichlin only give off tuma when you have the size of a kebeya. Mash can give off tuma when you have a revius. And here the Brisa says that while the honey's in the kaveris, it's not considered not an oichel and not a mashka that it should have kabbalah's tuma. And Rav Kahana just said that it is considered an oichel. Amar Abaya, v'tzricha alois v'shtein chalas. The Brisa is speaking about those two chalas that we spoke about in our shir that are left for the honeys to eat, for the bees to eat from. So since those two honeycombs are left for the bees, that's something that will not have kabbalah's tuma. The rest is a food. Rav Amar, Rav says that this brisa represents the opinion of Elazar, who says, and we spoke about this in our shiurim already, Daf Samachay, that Rav Elazar's opinion is that as long as the honey is in the beehive, it's considered like mechuba l'karka. And as we learned, when we learned that sugya, anything that's mechuba l'karka is not mekabel tuma. The Tanan, as the Mishnah Masechta Shviyos teaches us, kaveris devaro, a beehive, Rav Elazar amarei k'karka, Rav Elazar considers it like it's mechuba l'karka. And like the Rashbam explains, even if it's not physically attached to the ground, he considers it as if it's connected to the ground, and therefore the question of prosbol harei kakarka. So as we learned then, there are special kinyonim, and we learned this in recently also, the special kinyonim for karka, a special kinyonim for metatlin. For karka, the kinyon is kesef shtar chazaka. A kaveris will have that same halacha, and also there's going to be kinyon agav for metatlin that are on the karka. The Kaisel of Prusbol, as we learned, Hillel instituted a Prusbol. As we know, the Shemitah year cancels all loans. And what Hillel saw happening were that people were not lending money because they were concerned they'll never get the money they lent back because Shemitah will cancel the loan. So he said that one should write a Prusbol. And as we explained, the purpose of writing the Prusbol is that you're handing over the obligations to Beis Din. And when you hand over the obligations to Beis Din, then the halacha that Shviyas cancels the loans is not applicable. And but there's a halacha that the Prusbol is only effective if the loiva, if the person who owes the money, has karka. We explained when we learned the sugya, two primary reasons. Number one, because people normally only lend money to somebody who has real estate to pay off the debt with, and therefore that Hillel only felt that in such circumstances a prosbul should be acceptable. Another pshat that we learned is because if you have karka, you have from where to collect, you have from where to collect the debt. So a kaveris, says Rabbi Lezer, is considered like something which is mechubel karka, and therefore you could write a prosbul, because if the loiva has a kaveris, the halacha is that it's as if he has karka. V'enem kabel is tumah mekayma. It's not mekabel tumah, as we've been learning, karka is not mekabel tumah. V'aroid b'mena b'shabbos, if somebody scrapes off the honey on Shabbos, he's chayiv chatas, because it's as if he's taking something from where it grew, which is Issa deraisa. The Chum, I remember, whereas the opinion of the Chum is en kaisen la prosbul. We don't write a prosbul. They don't consider it karka. Ve'enka karka, it's not karka regarding the halachas that we spoke about kinyonim. U'mekabel is tumah mekayma, and therefore it's mekabel tumah. If somebody scrapes off the honey, it's not considered that he scraped something from which is attached, and you wouldn't be chayiv, you'd be potter avalosser, you wouldn't be chayiv deraisa, because deraisa is only by something that's attached to the ground. And now, says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Elazar, my tam de Rabbi Elazar, where does Rabbi Elazar come to say that kaveris, a beehive, is considered like it's mechubel karka? The ksiv, the pasuk teaches us in Sefer Shmuel that the Klal Yisrael went to battle with the Plishtim, and Shaul HaMelech said that no one is allowed to eat that day while they're in battle. Yonason, the son of Shaul, was not aware of that decree, and the pasuk says, "V'Yonason l'shama b'shbiya aviv v'sa'am." Yonason was not aware of the shvur that Shaul had instructed the people. For Yishlach Tzei Hamata Shabiyada, he took the stick that he was holding, for Yitbal Oysa Biyaris Tvash, and he stuck it into honey to put some honey into his mouth. And the pasuk indeed says, for Yoshev Yadav Al Piv, he put some of the honey into his mouth, for Ta'erna Enov, and he eyes lit up because he was already malnutrition. So not a question asked the Gemara, for Chimayin Yar Eitzel Tvash. Why does the pasuk use the word yar when we're speaking about honey? Alay malach, to teach us ma yar, tells me on Shabbos. Certainly, if somebody detaches something from a forest on Shabbos, that's considered a full-fledged malach of kaitzer, chayiv chatas. After vash, haroid me mena b'Shabbos, is chayiv chatas. That's how Rabbi Elazar comes to the opinion that a kaveris is considered mechubel karka. And therefore, if it's mechubel karka, the halacha that it, that's why it's not mekabel tumah. Ask the Gemara, but we go back to what we said. The Rav Kahana's opinion was that dvash is considered an oichel even if you had no machshava. Meisvei, ask the Gemara, the Braisa says dvash zav mikaverta, if honey is oozing out of the beehive, ein aloi oichel v'loi mashka. It's not considered not an oichel, not a mashka. So says the Gemara, Bishlam Labai Nicha, that brisa could be understood, because we could say that this brisa should be understood as Abaye spoke. Abaye spoke about that the two chalas of the vash that are designated for the bees are not considered food because they're left for the bees. And the brisa is teaching us, on even if they're oozing out of the beehive, until you decide that you're going to use it for human consumption, they're not considered a food or a mashka. El Larova. But Rava said that's referring to the Bryce Reb Kahana is following the Bryce, following the opinion of Kahana, a Reb Elazar Kasha, because this Bryce is saying that it's oozing out. And the whole reason why it wasn't Makabal Tumma was because it was still in the Kaveris. Once it's out of the Kaveris, so Reb Elazar's Vart that is considered mechubel karka is obviously no longer applicable. So why should it not be mekabel tumah? I'm Rav Zvid, to which Rav Zvid answers, the braisa here is referring to a situation, kigon shazav al gabi kli mos. It's pouring out onto a keli that's dirty, and therefore it's never going to be able to be an oichel. Rav Achav Yaakov Amar, it's speaking about a case, kigon shazav al gabi kashkashin. It's pouring out onto pieces of wood. And some Rishonim say that these two opinions, Rav Acha bar Yaakov and Razvid, are not arguing. They're giving different examples. But the some Rishonim say that they are actually arguing. Because when they get mixed up with pieces of wood, there's nothing you can do to make that honey edible. If they're on a clean moss, you could clean it and it'll be edible. So again, the Gemara asks, Meisvei, the Braisa teaches us, Dvash b'kavartoi, honey in the beehive, and a loy oichel loy mashka. It's not considered not an oichel, not a mashka. However, chishav alav lachila, if you decided you want to eat it, but tamat tumas oichlin, it does have tumas oichlin. The mashkin, if you decided to use it for mashkin, then it's makabal tumas mashkin. So Gemara makes this point. Bishlam labayanicha, according to this brisa is not a difficulty on Rav. Because this brisa, like Abaye said before, will say, speaking about the two chalas that are designated, that are used for the consumption of the bees, and therefore they're not makabel tuma until you decide to use them for human consumption. Once you decided to use it for human consumption, so they're not animal food, and that's why they're makabel tuma. Ella Rava, the Rava that didn't want to explain like Abaye, and Rava, because he didn't want to limit the brisa, explained through Rishonim that it's only speaking to two of the chalas. Kasha, why is this brisa not a question of Kahana? The brisa, we can't say that this brisa follows the opinion of Rabbi Elazar, who says the dvash has the halacha of a karka. Because if that's the case, even if you had a machshava that you want to eat it, it doesn't change. It's still karka. That brisa must not be furring, so it's following the opinion of Chachamim. And according to this brisa, we're saying that when you had a machshava that it should be an oichel, becomes an oichel. Rav Kahana said that dvash bekaveris is always an oichel. Amalach Rava, this brisa will follow the opinion of Rav Elazar that dvash is like karka. I, why is it makabel tuma if it's like karka? Tritz hachi, choshev lachila, if you decide you want to eat it, eina matama tumas oichlam. It's not makabel tuma because it's still mechubal karka. Tani kavosi Rav Kahana, and says the Gemara, there's a brisa that supports this. Dvash bekavarta matama tumas oichlin, shloim machshava. If you didn't decide to eat it, that the brisa supports what Rav Kahana says, that it's matama, at that point it's matama tumas oichlin, even if you didn't decide to eat it. So we learned further in the Mishnah, if I sold you my olive tree for the wood, you have to leave over shtei grufyos. Tanah Rabbanan, the Gemara expounds on that. Halakeich ilam chaver, if I buy a tree, lockets with the intention that you should be able to take off the wood, magbiyim karka tefach, you have to leave a karka above the ground, and then you could cut. If I sold you a basulus ashikma, we spoke about this type of tree extensively, that it's a very significant tree, the buyer has to leave the seller shloish tefachim. Sadna shikma, that it's a sycamore tree that was once cut already, you have to leave shnei tefachim. Bekarim, if you bought the branches, ubegafanim, or if you sold the grapevine, memekakel maladi, like knots on the tree, and you have to leave from the lowest knot and back down. Only from the lowest knot and up can you take. But the kolim barozim, by palm trees and cedar trees, choyfa mashrish achrov, you could cut it out entirely. Lefish ein gizamachlum. Because even if you leave over some of the tree, it wouldn't make a difference. It won't regenerate. Ask the Gemara, upsulz hashik mishloish tefachim binim, is da locha da bay upsulz hashikma. You have to leave three tefachim for mini. Ask the Gemara. The Mishnah Masech Shviyas teaches us, ain't kaitz in besul shikma b'shviyas. You're not allowed to cut a besul shikma in the Shemitah year. Neisha avoida. It's something that's also, it's considered working on the tree, because by cutting the tree, you make it better. Yudaymer kedarkai. You can, to cut it the way it's normally cut, also you're not allowed to. You could cut it above 10 tefachim, the kaitzitz, because when you cut it that high up, you're not helping the tree, or you cut it all the way on the bottom. If you cut it all the way on the bottom, it also won't grow back. So ask the Gemara, so we see that only if you cut it all the way by the ground is it detrimental to the ground. Ha'idach, anything above that, nalalei, it's good for the tree. So why are we saying that you have to leave three tefachim? As long as you leave something close, something, it's good enough. Answers the Gemara. Amar Baya, shlosh tefachim malalei. If you leave three tefachim, that's great. Miyam aretz, if you cut it all the way down to the ground, vade koshle, it's certainly not good for the tree. Mikan ve'elech, from the ground to three tefachim, or ten tefachim, or from three tefachim to ten tefachim, loy makshle v'loy uluy malalei. It's not great and it's not terrible. So gabi shviyas, when it comes to shviyas, where we have to be careful to make sure that the only thing we're doing is not something that improves the tree. We have to do something which is certainly not for the benefit of the tree, because we have halacha of safek deraisa l'chumra. We're not allowed to do anything to benefit the tree during the Shemitah year. And therefore, the only options are to cut it all the way down to the ground or above 10 tefachim. There we know that what you're doing to not benefit the tree. But our Mishnah is not focused on what's beneficial for the tree. Our Mishnah is discussing a seller and a buyer, what is included in the sale, what is not included in the sale. What we do is something that will be, which is good for the tree. And therefore, what's good for the tree is three tefachim. There's a machlokes achronim, when we're saying that cutting a tree is usher in the Shemitah year, does that apply by all trees, or does it only apply by vineyards? The opinion of the Chazon Ish is that it's only by vineyards. The opinion of the Eglei Tal is that it's by all trees. And actually, the Shas HaTshuva Shevet HaLevi Chela Gimel Yoyer Dei Simen Kuf Nun Ches says, from our Gemara, there's a raya to the opinion of the Eglei Tal. Because here, our Gemara is speaking about the Besulus HaShikma. And the Besulus HaShikma is not a vineyard. And yet, our Gemara is saying that even by Besulus HaShikma, there's a concern of cutting the tree. When is cutting the tree to the benefit of the tree, and when is it not for the benefit of the tree? So we have a raya, says the Shevet HaLevi, like the Eglei Tal said, that this halacha applies not just like the Chazon Ish says, by vineyards, applies everywhere. We learned in the Braisa, that the Kolam Barozim, when we sell a palm tree or a cedar tree, Chayfa Mashrish, the buyer could completely uproot the tree, Lefish Engez HaMachlev, they're not going to regenerate. Ask the Gemara, is that accurate? Vichy Erez Engez HaMachlev, is that indeed the case that the Erez tree, the cedar tree, does not regenerate? V'darash Rav Chiya by Alunyani, Ma'adik Siv, the Pasuk says, Tzadik HaTamar Yifrach, Ke'erez B'Avonin Yizga. Imnem HaTamar, so the Braisa asks, if the Pasuk, Rav Chiya asks, if the Pasuk speaks about a Tamar, if the Pasuk speaks about a date tree, Lama Nema Erez, V'Nema Erez Lama Nema Tamar, answers the Braisa, Ilo Nema Erez Lama Nema Tamar, Hayisi Omer, we would have said, Ma eres ein oisaperis, a cedar tree doesn't make produce. Af tzaddik ein oisaperis, the tzaddik doesn't produce peris. The Rashbam explains that he won't have peris for all the mitzvahs and Torah that he learned. Another pshat is that he won't have oilam haba. Ilan nema eres v'leim tamar yisem ma eres ein oisaperis, af tzaddik ein oisaperis, lekach nema tamar, that makes fruit. The tamar doesn't regenerate. Ef tzaddik ein gizloi meis. That after the tzaddik leaves the world, he won't necessarily have children that will replace him. Says the Gemara. Lekach nema eres. So, but we see from here that the Erez does regenerate. Says the Gemara, Hachamai Skinin, this Brisa is speaking about Bishar Mine Arozim. There are different types of Arozim. Some Arozim do regenerate, and some Arozim do not regenerate. Rav Huna, Damar Rav Huna, Amar Bei Rav, Asar Mine Arozim Haim. There are 10 different types of Arozim. Shnema, Etem, Amidba, Erez, Sheet of Hadas, Eight Shemen, Osim. Ba'ar Rava, Baroish Tidav, Asasha Yachtav. Erez is the Arza. Sheet is the Twinisa, Hadas is the Osa, H. Shemin is the Farsima, that's a type of wood that they has sap that you make tar out of it. Brosh is the Barsi, Tidur is the Shaga, Vesasha is the Shravina. But ask the Gemara, Hani Sheva Hava, if we count, we'll only have seven. Answers the Gemara, Kasra of Dima Omar, Hasifan Aleim, on the seven that I mentioned, there are the Aloinim, the Almoinim, and the Almugim. Aloinim is the Butni, Almoinim are the Baluti, and Almugi are the Kasisa. Ikad Amri, that some say that the three that were added were the three that are added are the Aroinim, Almoinim, and Almugim. Aroinim are called are the Ori, the Armoni are the Dovi, and the Almugi are the Kasisa. The Sefer Panim Yafis says that the Pasuk says that Tzadik HaTomer, somebody teaches, makes Paris, that means the Tomer makes Paris, that means he teaches Talmidim Torah. And at that time, he could have learned himself. So the person who teaches somebody Torah, teaches other people Torah, could start thinking to himself, was this a worthwhile enterprise? I could have been learning Torah myself and grow in my Yediyas HaTorah. But the Pasuk says, Ke'erez Balvonon Yizgeh. You start and you give up from your time and your effort to teach other people Torah. What that will create is Ke'erez Balvonon Yizgeh. You will actually grow more than you would have if you would have just learned Torah yourself. As the Gemara Masech, the Tainus, of Zainam and Alv tells us, Harbe lemadati merabaisai, I learned much from my Rabbeim, umetalmidai yoiser mikulam. And I saw that the Mefarshim explained that the Noyim Elimelech says, that the Pasuk says, Tzadik katomer yifroch, that somebody who is concerned about other people, somebody who's the real tzaddik that's concerned about other people, he is the person that cares about Bavon and Yizgah. He's the one that will be successful by thinking and caring about other people.